I'm speaking today with Councilmember Jarvis Johnson, who is serving his second term as Councilmember for District B. Councilmember, I'd like to ask, you've now been on council for almost 4 years. How has your second term, would you say, been different from your first, and how has the reality of it been different from or alike what you thought it would be when you were first running?
Yeah, sure. The second term certainly was a lot different. I learned what the bathroom was in my second term, you know, being the fact that you learn your way, and once you get comfortable and once you start understanding the process, things go very fast. Getting to know department heads, getting a better understanding of the mayor's agenda, and then seeing how you might be able to marry the two is what's been probably the most gain for me in my second term. And then being able just to build the relationship so that we can understand we need to get the things done that I wanted to get done in the district, which runs the entire gamut. District B is a very needy district. It has a lot of needs. And so we've been trying to just chip away at those needs just day by day.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that, because your district does have a lot going on in it. One of the things that your district contains is Intercontinental Airport.
Sure.
And there's been some activity lately regarding the, you know, the vendor contracts and stuff. I confess I don't follow that too closely. So can you talk to me a little bit about what's been going on with the contracts at Intercontinental Airport?
Well, I mean, the contracts, you always have different contracts going on at Continental. Continental is one of the largest airports in the entire country. It's growing every day. Because we're centrally located, it gives us a tremendous opportunity to become hubs for airlines. Obviously, we have Continental itself. And then just the opportunity for growth is always there. Because the market has been so strained as it's been the last year or so, it really has stalled much of the larger projects that we wanted to do. One in particular was the expansion of Terminal D, and the fact is that we were unable to do that because Continental right now, they can't get the paper right. The banks are very tough, and Continental doesn't want to go into the market with all the uncertainty. So until that happens, that's a $1.7 billion expansion that we're talking about doing at Continental. So it's been a struggle over the last year, but every day we're still doing things at Continental. We have a $4 million contract on the table tomorrow to talk about some job board contract stuff. We're also doing, always doing runway projects, always doing expansion, always doing upgrades on our automatic people, always doing expansion. I mean, so Continental itself is a small city, and so it takes a lot of support.
And again, I don't follow this stuff too closely, but there's been some controversy regarding the, I guess the organization that actually runs the airport and the way they're handling some of their finances. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, that was a contract that was led back in 2001. During that time, that contract was put in place to give Continental, I'm sorry, this board, this nonprofit board, an opportunity of helping other smaller airport systems across the world grow and expand, all with the idea that that would be a relationship being built between the city and these other airport systems. The controversy kind of laid around mostly, will it affect our bottom line? Will it affect our bonding rating? And at the end of the day, it would not. Back in 2001, when the council at that time vetted it, looked at it, and recognized that it would be a completely separate entity from the city in itself. And so it was not something that I think that we should be concerned with. And unfortunately, some people politicized it. And quite frankly, it could have cost us some points in New York when we were trying to sell some of our paper. And so I just think it was an unfortunate situation that was already taken care of years ago.
Okay.
That came back to rear its head again, right? But I think it's a moot point.
Now, one of the things that you've worked on in your time at council was the municipal Wi-Fi project, right? Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the original vision of that to bring it everywhere in the city fell through, but I understand that there's still areas in the city where this is being done. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, the Wi-Fi project in itself, when we first entered into our agreement with Earthlink, I think the mayor, I would give him a lot of credit for putting in a provision that would give us money in the event that the Earthlink does not meet the obligations of their contract. And because of that, we have a $5 million penalty, I guess, if you will, that offered us the opportunity of then going into different areas of the city of Houston and opening up Wi-Fi. And that was at some of our city parks and some of our nonprofit agencies and our multipurpose centers. That gave us the opportunity of expanding the Wi-Fi in those underserved communities, and not necessarily even underserved, but it was at public venues in which we now have the opportunity of having Wi-Fi. It's not where we want it to be. I mean, we certainly want to go into any park in the city of Houston and sit outside and enjoy the weather and be wireless, but unfortunately that's not here yet. But I think in a very short period of time we will have that, because right now we just have these web mesh nets in certain hot spots across the city.
Okay. Obviously the city's financial situation has been in the news lately with the reports of budget shortfalls, and one of the things that was, I guess, on the mayor's list of expenses that could be curtailed to help close this gap was the closing of a golf course that's in your district. I don't recall the name of it off the top of my head. You opposed this. Talk to me a little about that.
Well, I don't think that was the situation from the beginning. I think that was a knee-jerk reaction to something later. Originally, this was an amendment put in by Councilmember Clutterbuck. That essentially said they wanted to take a look and do a study on these potential parks, these parks that were potentially losing money. The idea was, once we looked at it and recognized it, first of all, parks is not a revenue-generating entity. There are plenty of parks that we have in this city that are losing money. We give $400,000 a year to Lake Houston that we receive no benefit from. I think when the mayor mentioned Brock Park again in another press conference, I think the conversation came up and he mentioned it. I wasn't privy to it, and nor did I was I concerned about it, because I think at the end of the day, the mayor, as well as me, as well as a lot of my colleagues, recognize the closing of a park, any park in the city of Houston, would be detrimental to the quality of life for that particular community. And I don't think we should make knee-jerk reactions or make decisions based on what we find to be economically feasible, because what might be economically feasible at the end of the day would become more damaging to a community than I think we really want to deal with. Closing a park opens the door to a host of other issues that community would have that the city some way or another will have to pay for. And then at the end of the day, you know, for council people to try to make decisions for another district that they don't have the finger on the pulse of the people is irresponsible. And so I don't think that we're ever going to be put in that situation where we're going to make those kind of decisions without really vetting the entire process, having a real sit down and dialogue with the constituents of that area so that we can make informed and good decisions that's not going to have a tremendous negative impact.
So what is your opinion now on the steps that are being taken to deal with the city's financial shortfall? Do you think we're doing the right things? Is there more we should be doing?
Well, you know, we can always, everybody wants to tighten their belts, but at the end of the day, the constituents need their city services. We have to try to find ways to cut back on wasteful spending. What would that wasteful spending be? You know, at this point, I can't be the judge of that. I have gone through our budget with a fine-tooth comb, and right now I just don't think that there's a lot of fat in our budgets. But at the end of the day, the constituents want the trash picked up. They want police. They want better infrastructure. I don't think we're out taking, you know, city junkets. I don't think we're out, you know, running around on city dimes and doing frivolous things. I think everybody who's here is doing things to improve the city. You can never judge. We're in a recession, and while our tax base still is good, our sales tax are down, and that's just the consumers. Consumers are really holding on to the dollar, and so of course that impacted us. So we have to take a look at what made those areas be that we need to cut in order to ensure that we don't have $100 million shortfall again. But I truly believe that we'll bounce back within the next year and meet our obligations and not have a budget more than what our projected revenues will be.
I guess the question I would have, I mean, the focus has always been on the spending side of the equation. You know, do we need to look at what we're doing on the revenue side? Are we taxing at the right level? Are we getting all the revenue? Getting all the revenue we should be getting?
I don't think we're getting all the revenue we should be getting, but I think, again, you're talking about creating revenue for creating another revenue stream that the constituents are just not ready for. When you start talking about having a drainage fee, in which we're one of the only municipalities in the country that does not have one, creating a fee on garbage collection, in which we're one of the only large municipalities that don't have one. But when you start dropping that on the citizens, you know, at the end of the day, that's not going to bode well. And especially during the election year, it's really not going to bode well. And so you have to be very careful on what are we leaving on the table. Truly believe that with a disposal fee for garbage, we're going to be able to generate $40 million right there. And same thing with our drainage fee. There might be opportunities for us to do that. But then there might be some other things that I think we're leaving on the table, things that impact District B. District B is inundated and overrun with abandoned and vacant properties in which we're not receiving tax dollars on. We have abandoned and dilapidated properties in which owners simply leave it there, speculate, and at the end of the day, they're destroying our tax base, leaving money on the table for which I think we would gain from if the developers would move into an area and say, I want to build my next community here, or I want to build my next strip mall right here. Well, they can't because the area is run down. And so therefore they say, well, I don't want to go there, head on out to Pearland, head on out to somewhere in the suburbs. And so I think we're losing a tax base. We're eroding our tax base while all of the smaller municipalities around us are gaining. When you look at the city of Houston, you recognize that all of the great jobs that we have. District B is a very rich district. A lot of people wouldn't believe so, but it's a rich district. As we've already pointed out, I have Intercontinental, which is 40,000 jobs. I have Anheuser-Busch, and I have, you know, Allied Waste, and we have major corporations. I have Halliburton in District B, but it does not translate to a tax base because all of those individuals, most of those individuals who live or who go to work in the city go outside the city to live, in which they're taking their tax base. It's just such an unfortunate thing that when we look at our Houston Fire Department, our Houston Police Department, more than half of both of those departments, they don't live in the city of Houston. And so, yeah, we have an opportunity to increase our tax base, but I think it all is determined by creating better planned communities, creating better neighborhoods, that certainly I think will improve our schools, that certainly will open up the door for more jobs, that will lower crime. I believe it's all interconnected. And so we can do a much better job, but I think it's important that we understand the connectivity of just simply creating a better planned community, and all of those other things will follow.
You mentioned schools. I mean, the North Forest ISD is in your district, and that ISD has been under a lot of pressure from the state and from the federal government for, you know, not meeting standards and requirements. And, you know, there's Sam Houston High School has been reconstituted. There's been a lot of issues in the North Forest ISD, and I noticed that mayoral candidates this year are talking about different education-related ideas, and, you know, President Obama has talked about cities taking a more active role in improving the schools. What, if anything, would you like to see the city of Houston do to help out something like the North Forest ISD.
And I think we've taken the right step in helping North Forest right now. We're working with North Forest to find some dollars to help them with their air conditioning problem. That's just on the surface. That's on the just for buildings itself. But I think what we need to do is to become very active in working with the school board to helping them understand, to help them create a system that will be what I believe a healthier system. But I also believe that it's our responsibility as a city to look into those communities that are deemed affordable or low income. What happens is by constantly concentrating poverty in those communities, you find yourself stagnating the growth of that school district. And so the mayor and I have talked extensively about creating incentives for the development community to build better communities within these particular areas. Why? Because when you look at building a better community, you find that you're going to get a different kind of constituent and resident. That constituent and resident, it will bring new things and new resources to the table that will challenge the school board, as opposed to what I'm thinking that we're doing right now is just reshuffling the poverty deck. All of the people who, North Forest used to be a great, great, great school district, but at the very moment when people found that they could move someplace else, move to a better community, they fled. And when they fled, they left only one particular group of people who did not have the income or the resources to leave, leaving them in that community. And that's why North Forest is faltering right now. But I believe that it's on the rise. With the conservatorship that's in place, with Dr. Johnson that's in place, he's doing a great job. At some point or another, now the ship, I think, is moving in the right direction. It just needs to stay on that path. But we as a city can do a much better job by creating a more incentive package for the developers to build better communities so that those individuals who live in those communities will now challenge the school board, because they're not going to just simply say, no, I'm not going to accept what you're offering. We're going to push you to make you a better school district. Which I think that everybody's done. When you look at why does Pearland, why does, you know, the Kingwoods and the Woodlands and all of those communities, why are those communities in respect, why are those schools better? Because the residents of that community push those school districts to be better.
Okay. You also touched on the matter of crime. Just recently, the folks in Acres Homes, the suspect in a lot of the rapes and killings out there has been identified. It's been... Mm-hmm. That's been a problem there for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, many of the mayoral candidates have all talked about wanting to increase the size of HPD, or at the very least, not decrease the size of HPD, and to focus more resources on crime. You know, what can be done in places like Acres Homes that have had these kinds of persistent problems?
Crime. Yeah, I've never called a police officer before a crime happened. You call police officers after a crime has already occurred. And so police officers have never been a deterrent to crime. I'll never want to decrease a police force. I think with the city the size of Houston, you certainly have to have a formidable police force. But I've never thought that police officers reduce crime. What we need to do is... The reason why Acres Homes was so attractive to the murderer and the rapist was because of the vast undeveloped land that was there. They could hide in the cover of night. The homes were so spread out, nobody could ever see. There was not a community in which people could actually have walk teams walking up and down those streets. It's a very isolated and at night a very desolate community. And so it's important that we find ways to create development. Businesses follow rooftops. Businesses equal jobs. Jobs offer the deterrent to crime that young people would get into because there is no money at home. And so if we find ways to creating better development, why is there, I'm not saying there's no crime in the lands, you know, Pearland, Woodland, Sugarland. I'm not saying there's no crime, but crime is at a reduced rate, certainly they're not the size of Houston, but at the end of the day, if you create better development, you bring the people back to these communities, you will find that crime will be reduced. Because now there are whole communities that understand the value of their neighborhoods, and now they create citizen on patrol, they create, you know, their own management districts by which they go and hire, you know, security details. They do more things that create more community-based policing, because it is going to be the community that's going to reduce the crime. If the community starts to get outside and watch and look, one of the initiatives that I'm putting in place is asking. Because many of our young children getting out of school, you know, that's a lot of fighting. That's a lot of mischievous activity going on. I'm asking all of my residents between the hours of 2:30 and 4, simply go on your porch and sit on your porch and become the eyes for the community. So if you see a young child acting up or getting in trouble, you can immediately make a phone call to say, we have a problem over here and you guys need to come address it. Right now, we have more good people living in those neighborhoods than we do bad, but unfortunately the good lock themselves in and they're too afraid to go outside, leaving these bad elements to kind of do what they want. So community-based policing is what's really going to be important, but we have to bolster that and give them the incentive to becoming more community, to become more engaged, and also let them know that we will protect you, the citizen, as you're being our eyes and ears in the community. I've seen how being more engaged in community reduces crime. I used to run a nonprofit in Fairfield, and there was a lot of drugs and prostitution going right there on the corner where my youth center was. And every day I would fight with the prostitutes and tell them to get off the corner, but they wouldn't go anywhere. I would call the police. By the time the police got there, they had already left. But the very moment by which I said, you know what, all of my meetings are now going to be held outside. And so whenever I had a meeting, whether it was with my parents, or whether it was with a funder, or whether it was with anybody, my meetings were actually held outside because I wanted the element to see me watching them. And when they did that, they would leave. If not for that, if only for that very moment, they moved around, because no criminal is going to do his dirt in front of people who he knows is going to report. And at some point or another, the police will come and make arrests. That's what we need. That's why communities who are low in crime, that's what they do. They're engaged. They walk their communities. They make calls, and they keep in contact with one another. And that's how we reduce crime in our city.
Okay. Metro, as you know, is working on the next couple of light rail lines. They've got three under construction, two more that are going to be coming. What impact do you see this having on your district, and you know, what else do you want to see Metro be doing to improve mass transit?
If they're under construction, you need to tell me where they're under construction.
Well, they are starting.
Yeah, they've been starting for a while. I hope that Metro does get it right. I know that this is not going to be a simple process or a quick process. The city the size of Houston certainly needs mass transit, but we need to make sure that we're taking the people from the places of residence to the communities, to the business communities, or from the airport to the downtown business communities or to our hubs. When we do that, now we're moving commerce, now we're moving jobs, now we have dollars flowing. And so I understand it's a process. It's one that it's gonna, you got to crack a few eggs in order to get an omelet. You want to make sure that you do it right, and so it's going to be a growing process. It's not gonna be as quick as I would like for it to be, but I do hope that eventually that it does give the results that I hope it gives. How does it impact District B? Unfortunately, District B is not receiving any of the rail lines, although we have a very large ridership. We're not getting any of the rail lines. What I talked with Metro about is creating more dedicated lines that would help the buses get to and from a lot quicker. Put those things on a rapid pace in order to move our residents to and from work. So, I think, and when they're putting together these quick lines, That I think will work very well. And they're very sleek. They look good. And I think it gives us a different image in our city.
Okay. One of the things that council will be taking up in your third term in office will be redistricting, and including two new council council districts. How do you want to see that process go, and how do you want to see it affect District B?
Well, certainly you have to make sure that anything that you put in place has to be one that's going to be fair, transparent, and equitable. The city is as diverse as the city of Houston. Certainly needs to have a council that is representative of that diversity. When you look at the lines that are drawn for District B, you can obviously see that those lines are gerrymandered.
Well, it's partly because a lot of the area around there isn't City of Houston, right?
No, it's partly because you want to make sure that you have a district, you want to have a representative that looks or representatives of that particular community. District B, when people ask me to describe District B, I tell them I'm every black neighborhood in the north. Because essentially that's what I am. I can show you the lines. So I think what we need to do is to find ways to find the representation that will be necessary to ensure that the people are not being left out, that their voices are not being not heard. And so I will watch it very closely and will be intimately involved with it to ensure that we create lines that will help this city. And help the people in which the city is made up of to ensure that they're getting their representation. But I don't want to see these lines drawn like that again. I think those lines are a bit cumbersome.
All right. Mayor White recently expressed the view that it might be time to take a look at City of Houston's term limits laws and consider revising them. What's your take on that?
Well, I certainly believe that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. While I don't think that we should end term limits, I think we have to look at the limits that are put in place. To do 3 2-year terms is very difficult because you're always running. I also believe that it's important that we take a look at maybe extending the limits of city council while leaving the mayor at his or her term. And the reason why I say that is because this is a strong mayoral form of government. And by giving council members an opportunity of getting their issues heard, making the departments have a better understanding of what the council members' requests are and what the vision is, I think that gives us an opportunity. And then certainly it gives council members an opportunity of transferring from administration to administration, the vision. Because at the end of the day, again, it's the mayor's agenda. It's left up to city council to negotiate with the mayor. And so if you have a city council in place that transfers from one administration to the next, then you'll have a transfer. So when the next administration comes in, he's trying to get support, he or she is trying to get support, they're going to come to the council members and say, what do you want to see for your district? And while that happens now, I think that gives a little more leverage to council members. And so should a council member's district seat be 8 years, 2-4 years? I would certainly not disagree with that. Should the mayor then stay 3 2s? Probably. I don't know. Or give a mayor 2 4s and give council 3 4s. I don't know. Find a way, but I think that's just my take, that we should extend the term limits, but I think council members should have a longer term just so that the council members can get their agendas in place. And it takes a lot longer because at the end of the day, department heads they're all dancing to the beat of the mayor. And our dances are to be the council members. And while we vote on their budget, it's still the mayor's budget.
Okay. What should the new mayor's top priority be when he or she takes office this coming January?
you heard me say the whole day. Development. Development is our tax base. We have an eroding tax base. We need to increase our tax base. So we need to find ways to increase our tax base, creating better development, which means it's going to bring more jobs, which means it's going to improve our schools, which means it's going to reduce crime. All of that is connected, I really believe, which is going to put our infrastructure in place. Because right now, our CIP follows the development. And so what we need to do is to find ways of creating the development that we desire, that we want, so that we can get better infrastructure, so that our neighborhoods can be revitalized, so that our schools can be impacted, so, you know, that we can create some jobs, so that when people, you know, when major corporations from across this country and this world want to move into a city, they see that it is all interconnected and we have a master plan that deals with it as such. And I think when people do that, they're going to say, I really like City of Houston because, you know, they have their act together. It's not this hodgepodge development. It's not, you know, kind of, you know, a guessing game as to what's going to happen next. And so I think that would be for a new mayor, the main priority.
Do you have a preference for mayor in this race?
No. No preference at this time.
All right. And you have an opponent in this election. So when people come to vote in November and they come to the District B race, why should they vote to give you another term?
Well, absolutely. I mean, certainly we want to go ahead and continue the progress that we already have made. And with all of the things that I've been very successful at doing, number one, building consensus amongst my neighborhoods as the very first top priority I said I wanted to do when I got into office, and I think we've done that. Number two, open up the door for better development, to become a marketer for District B, to let the development community know this is who District B is, this is where we are, this is what we have to offer. And certainly when you do all of that, then of course that reduces the crime again, better development. Doing much of the job fairs that I've done, creating more business opportunity in District B, to fight for more inclusion with jobs with some of the major corporations that are in District B that ask every single day for dollars or more money or whatever they need in order to make their businesses whole. And I say all the time, if we're going to make your business whole, you have to make the community in which you reside whole by creating more job opportunities. And so we want to continue what we've already begun. District B, I think, is well on the right path. And so we want to continue to our path of building a better District B. When you build a better District B, you build a better city.
All right. Councilmember Jarvis Johnson, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.